I don't want me to sing ever on this podcast. So take out the singing, because that was real embarrassing.
Welcome to Death by Millennial. I'm Tiffany.
And I'm Dana.
And we're two designers taking a closer look at the industries millennials are supposedly killing. And today, we're killing physical retail.
In 2018 alone, 70 million square feet of retail space closed. But is it really all millennials' fault?
We don't think so.
The truth is that many brands are not only thriving, but expanding their physical footprints with more experiential destinations. In this episode, we'll dive into the growing trend of branded cafes, and later we'll chat with a special guest, Brandon Camarda from Rafa.
But first, let's talk about
the current state of affairs.
So retail is dying, apparently. There are some numbers associated with that, right? Like 70 million square feet of retail space closed last year, probably because of Toys R Us mostly. When's the last time you walked into Toys R Us?
And a Best Buy.
Yeah.
I don't know. I haven't been in a Best Buy in forever because of Amazon. And my only recollection of Best Buy in the last like 5 years is that Serial podcast, right, and the payphone in the Best Buy parking lot.
Right.
Not a good look for Best Buy.
No, poor Best Buy. RIP. So there are, you know, stores closing down. That's true. But millennials are still spending more than any other generation, $60 billion in the United States each year.
Yeah.
So it's not like we're not shopping.
No, I feel like my friends are constantly buying things. My wife is constantly buying things. Every time I show up at my house, there's a new Amazon box.
Yeah. So everyone does buy stuff online. Like, no doubt we're shopping online and it makes things more convenient and easier to...
Yeah, it's like not like my friends or myself are not shopping. Are there any stores that you visit still?
I like walk through stores for inspiration, but I don't like buy stuff. Is that weird?
Do you like try things on and then buy them online?
No.
I feel like the only store I like regularly go to and like love going to are bookstores.
Ooh,
like,
yeah.
I love Good Elliott call. Bay.
Yes.
I go to Elliott Bay at least once a week.
Flip through the magazines.
Buy all the books that I love. And I just like really like that space. It's so inviting. It's so warm. There's like wood floors. There's so many books. Everyone's happy and like engaged. I feel like no one's on their phone in their store. Like, okay, there are people on their phones, but.
Yeah. I will say I'm guilty of loving a book in Elliott Bay and checking how much it costs online.
Ooh,
I know,
bad look, Dana.
I know that's bad, but support, I'm on a budget.
Support your local bookstore.
Well, I've never bought it online. I just check. I just have to know, you know, make an educated purchase.
It's time for the remix.
Let's talk about game changers.
So the industry is trying to make up for this digital shopping kind of trend by doing a few things, right? Like pop-ups and
collabs,
events.
Yeah,
collabs.
But branded cafes seem like the newest thing that they're trying to do. So AT&T, as we talked about, AT&T Capital One. There's Brooks Brothers, which has the Red Fleece Cafe, I think. Something,
yep.
Fleece.
Yep.
WeWork also has a cafe that opened up in New York. Shinola.
Yep.
All of these places are opening up branded cafes.
Ralph Lauren, which is my personal fave. Go look it up. It's beautiful.
That one is extra beautiful.
If you're into aesthetics like we are, take a peek.
Yeah. I think cafes like historically have been the place, like in France, if you think about that, where philosophers and just like people just sat around and talked.
Right.
Like really a community building space.
Right. But on top of that, brands are also seeing that millennials buy a shit ton of coffee.
I feel like the idea of cafes have changed. Like, I don't go to a cafe to talk to strangers. I
No.
go to get coffee and sit there and like read my phone.
Hang out
with my friends.
Yeah.
But I'm not like trying to interact with other people.
No, me either. Antisocial millennials, I guess.
So it's like, yeah, are these cafes actually working the way that these brands want them to?
Well, when we visited the one in Capitol Hill, the AT&T Lounge in my neighborhood, we did not see anyone talking to each other. Yeah, so when you walk in, basically there's a TV on the left and like a little bit of lounge furniture. And then the first thing you see is this long coffee bar and a barista there.
Yeah.
And then seating booths by the window on the side.
Yeah, where multiple people were working at.
Everyone was on the booth side against the window with their laptops, not talking to anybody.
And then you can like very like easily see the physical divide in the space.
Yeah.
It's like on the left is the cafe, and then on the right it becomes AT&T.
Yeah.
And then that's where
kind of towards the back.
Yeah. That's where you get like the bean bags and the hits of corporate blue and orange.
And the displays with the product on it.
Yeah. And then the salesperson is kind of just sitting at the table on the side.
Yeah, she's sitting. It was super awkward, actually. She was sitting at this table by herself, like not like looking very approachable at all. Just
yeah.
by herself working. So it was like you almost felt like you'd be interrupting her if you had a question.
Yeah, I guess if we like were more interested in the product, she'd be like, come up and say hi.
I don't know.
I think so.
Anyway.
So this AT&T store specifically has partnered with Adas Technical Books, which is a local Seattle bookstore. And they...
Which you're a huge fan of.
I love Adas Technical Books. It's on 15th on Capitol Hill, North Capitol Hill. Every time I walk by it, I have to go in. It yeah. is just like the most beautiful, warm, geeky place. It's very niche. It's all about kind of like technology and geekery. They have like a bunch of circuits.
Geekery.
It's my word. They have a bunch of circuits and like toys that you can play with. They also have a cafe in there. There's a co-working space. And even though it's like very techy, it's very, I feel like, diverse. Because it is called Adas Technical Books, Ada was like the first computer programmer and she was a woman, so the space is like automatically open to
yeah. And it seems very Seattle, like that combination you just described of like
yeah.
tech and like warm cafe
mm-hmm.
is like exactly why AT&T probably was like ooh
yeah. I think the choice of choosing Adas as a partner to open up this lounge was a really good one,
right?
Because it's in the same neighborhood, people know in that neighborhood know who they are. But
and they have a loyal fan base already.
Yeah. But it feels like Adas is not in that AT&T space. When you walk in, I wouldn't know that it was an Adas cafe.
I didn't know. You told me.
Yeah. Also, like, Adas is known for their books and their, like, tech stuff.
Yeah. No books.
Not specifically for their coffee.
Right.
So, like, when you walk in and you just say it's, like, an Adas space, I don't feel that all.
Since there are no books.
There are no books. And I guess they have this like robot coffee making machine, but no one would know that. Like
yeah.
I know that because I looked it up online.
Yeah.
But like the barista didn't talk about it. It
no.
looks just like a weird gizmo thing.
Yep.
And you wouldn't order it specially because I don't think there's any signage about it. Maybe there's
no.
like some signage off that's really small, but I don't think I saw it.
No, it wasn't apparent to us.
Yeah.
But I feel like if we're going to look at it through AT&T store lens, this is a major upgrade because...
Yeah, I would definitely say so. Because I can get a coffee. I can, like, wait in a booth away from the salesperson
yeah.
while they fix my phone.
You don't have to sit in one of those, like, plastic stools.
Plastic high stools? Why
yeah.
are they all high?
Yeah, I don't know.
I feel like, one, it's, like, you know, ableist. And it's uncomfortable.
Yeah. It's awkward, too. Like, you're like, okay, I'm sitting here by myself. When are they going to come back?
I can't look at my phone because my phone's broken. They took it. What
yeah.
am I supposed to do?
So now you can sit and have a coffee, which is definitely an upgrade.
Yeah. So there's an AT&T closer to me. If I was still on AT&T, I switched. But I would definitely go to the cafe instead. I'd walk that extra, like, whatever, quarter mile to that one.
Yeah. I am curious, though, from Ada's point of view, like, what they're really getting out of it. Like,
I think they must be getting, like, subsidized rent or just, like, an extra I guess like you're just getting exposure.
Yeah, but I don't know if it's good exposure.
I think it's not bad, but I think it's not true to them. So yeah. I feel like this is great for AT&T, great right. for the customer experience. But Ada, I think either they need to step it up or like AT&T needs to allow them to step it up to make it feel more like their space.
Yeah, I think these kind of like corporate local partnerships only really work when like it is even and they're like really both mutually benefiting from it.
Yeah.
And I think here it's pretty obvious what's happening. Like a corporate company tried to fit into this neighborhood and was like, oh, these guys are here and like hip with it. Let's yeah. tack their name on something.
Yeah.
So it's not enough, I don't think.
No.
We went to another one too.
Capital One Cafe.
Which is a bank.
Which is an online bank.
Doesn't have physical banks. So what the heck does a cafe look like? A banking cafe look like?
You know, not bad.
Actually, it wasn't bad.
Actually, you know, still very corporate looking. So South Lake Union is like tech city.
Amazon land.
Amazon land.
Yeah.
So everything's bright and shiny and clean.
Yeah. New.
New. So I feel like Capital One Cafe fits in there pretty well.
Right. And they have multiple of these around yeah. the country.
Yeah. So the cafe is like all brick on the outside.
The branding was obvious.
The branding was very obvious. You walk in, it's two ATMs in the beginning.
Yep.
Then you walk through another set of doors.
With a greeter. With a greeter. Which you know I'm not a fan of.
A greeter. This is not a Seattle thing. So no. Capital One Cafe, I think there's multiple across the nation. I feel like most other cities would be okay with this.
Yeah.
Seattle, not a city where we want a greeter.
It threw me off. I was like, she just said hi. And I was like, oh, hey. And then she didn't help us direct us anywhere. It's like, okay, well, you're just saying hi. That's like not helpful.
Yeah. And then you get funneled into the Pete's Cafe. So
yeah.
this is a collaboration between Pete's and Capital One Cafe, which
was more obvious for sure.
Yeah. Good for Pete's.
So Pete's had like a huge sign above their marble bar. It felt pretty good.
Yeah. When the last time I went into a Pete's, maybe it was like 10 years ago.
Dingy.
I feel like very similar to the logo. It's like very, I don't even know how to describe
traditional
it.
Traditional old school coffee
yeah,
shop.
Traditional old school. And yeah. this is, yeah, white subway tiles, marble, big marble
they
counter.
Got on Pinterest.
They got on Pinterest, definitely. Very little of their like specific brand colors.
Yeah.
But they did have their logo there.
It looked good.
Yeah.
For them. And like the coffee seemed more upscale than their usual.
Still not as good as, you know, the coffee that we like.
Right.
Because we're snobs.
Seattle snobs.
But we got some coffee. Then you round the corner and then you're bombarded with another greeter.
And a giant TV screen.
Giant TV screen.
With a basketball game, which I played and did not do too well at.
No, Dana's hand-eye coordination is
real bad. Real, real bad. And the lady was just watching us, and that's how she got us.
Yeah.
We were playing the game, and she was like, so, that game's fun, isn't it? And we're like,
uh-oh. 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 Someone's going to talk to us.
And she did.
Yeah. And then she like told us about the cafe, which I thought was really
awesome.
She
was actually pretty good. Like the brand ambassadors are dressed a little more casually. They're not so stuffy for a bank. Like I was impressed.
It wasn't a polo.
No.
No. And she kind of gave us more insight that I feel like made me more open to liking the Capital One Cafe.
Totally.
Like they provide all their meeting spaces are only for nonprofits and for students.
To rent space there, yeah.
And they have free money advice. They have like someone.
Financial advice.
Yeah, free money advice.
Money.
Monies, give me that dollar bills. What are those?
Yeah, no, that was cool. I was like, ooh, maybe I should come back here and do that.
Yeah, and then she was just like, oh yeah, you can just work here.
Yeah. Like, and there were a lot more people, like, actually interacting with each other. So it seemed like more, like, business people having a meeting,
it
casual.
Seems, yeah, you could definitely have a meeting there. It wasn't loud. There's so much space. It's a huge footprint. There's an upstairs. There's a downstairs.
It was, yeah.
Of there's course, like we were at the downstairs.
A giant, giant wooden staircase that looked like they had invested quite a bit of money in. Like,
yeah.
It was big.
It was
that
very big.
That kind of divided the space and then brought you upstairs, which is where all the, like, meeting space was.
Yeah, and they had some giant screens with some funky furniture, funky, fun corporate furniture.
Yeah, the furniture was cool, like wavy, like loungy kind of stuff that you can lay down on, and it was interesting.
Yeah, and then upstairs is where you can get like the free consulting. You can sign up for an appointment, and I thought that was really great because I would never take, I don't like the idea of like talking to someone about money.
Yeah,
we're which private. I should be like, I should be like investing with my future Roth IRA, whatever.
Yeah,
stocks. You know, I don't
we
know
both
how.
We need to talk to this lady.
Yeah, I don't know how any of this stuff works. And like, if it you got if you gave me an ad online on Instagram, like ignore
for sure
on but the because, bus, ignore
because it was this peer, like someone similar to our age, dressed kind of casually, saying like, "Oh yeah, this is like a free cool service." We're like, "Oh."
And then you're in the space and it doesn't seem that intimidating.
No.
And then you see the actual person working in there.
And she seems nice.
Oh, I could do this.
Yeah.
I think it's a really great way to like lasso us in.
Totally. And I think I'm not sure the coffee shop is what like made this space, you know, the community hub that they're going for. I think it's the services that they're providing.
Yeah. But I think they needed a space where they could like shuffle people into.
Right.
So that, like,
it's helpful.
Like, you would be exposed to their services.
Yeah. And it's nice to, like, have a coffee while you're meeting someone, yeah. For sure.
Yeah. The one thing I would say is, like, because of all these great things, they're providing it to a very specific community right now in South Lake Union. Very, like, rich tech people.
Yeah.
It'd be awesome. I wonder, like, what would happen if they put it into another neighborhood.
They're just really trying to make the services super accessible, like financial services. But wouldn't it make way more sense if those services were for the people who really need them?
Yeah.
Rather than these people at Amazon.
Who are super rich and already have their financial advisors.
Yeah. It's a good note. I think overall we were pretty impressed.
Yeah. I was a hater when I saw it.
I mean, we'd heard about it and we're like, oh, we got to go see this thing.
And it was really nice.
But we were pleased.
Like, if they didn't have all of those other, like, all of the services, then I'd be like, stupid cafe.
Yeah. Their service and their brand ambassadors, I think, really worked out.
Even though we hated them.
At first.
Yeah.
And the greeter can please stop.
I think it's they could take much. The greeter out. You
and
don't
she
need
said goodbye to us too.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh man. It's embarrassing. Capital One, if you're listening, maybe food for thought. You know?
Food for thought.
So like we mentioned earlier in the episode, we also visited Rafa, the premium cycling brand here in Capitol Hill, and interviewed Brandon, the club coordinator there. And we had the pleasure of going to their actual store, so you'll hear some cool bike sounds and...
Some doors opening.
Doors opening.
Some cafes, some coffees being made, some espressos.
We just wanted you to feel like you were there. So pretend you're there, sip a coffee if you have one, and here's our interview with Brandon.
Hi. Hello, we are at Rafa. We're here with Brandon, and we're going to talk to him just about the brand and kind of how he got involved in it, and a little bit more about the store and how it kind of works with a cafe. Thanks for having us, Brandon.
Absolutely.
I feel like Rafa does a really good job about kind of making sure that it's not just a store, mm-hmm. and that's like more involved in your lifestyle. And I feel like with other companies that feels kind of wrong or bad, like they're trying to like really get into your life and make you pay for things. But from what we've seen with like the events and like the community events, it feels like really like just a part of people's lives.
That's good. That's what we want.
And I think part of that is like your unique mission. Like your founder, we've listened to a few interviews from him and that you guys are not really trying to sell product first. It's like changing the world by getting people into cycling and making cycling the best sport in the world.
Yep. Yeah, I definitely, so, you know, Simon, our founder, is, he's definitely committed to that mission. That's one thing I feel from working at Rafa for 2 years, it's like very clear, it's very genuine. You know, I think that in its like very first incarnation, it was like this little like project almost, where he wanted to create this community outlet for people who are fans of cycling to be able to enjoy the sport together, and then make some products that supported them in their endeavors on their bike, whether it was sport or not. So the cool thing, I think, and maybe why it feels a little more like authentic in how we integrate retail and, you know, cafe or whatever community, is that I think it's always been a part of the mission, is like to create a space where people can come and just enjoy all things cycling.
Yeah, and can you tell us a little bit about the clubhouses and why it's called a clubhouse, and how you guys shifted from, I mean, a lot of stores just call their stores stores.
You know, we refer to it as a clubhouse because it's like a clubhouse for all folks who like cycling to come and make their space, you know. And so definitely a clubhouse because it's supposed to be this welcoming environment that's not 100% focused on being a store.
Yeah, can you go into like how you made it more comfortable, or like how it was like, yeah, what was that process of like making it feel like a little more authentic, a little bit more Rafa, maybe a little bit more Seattle?
We definitely have local elements to all of our stores. They're all like similar. We have the same sort of fixtures, but there's a lot of like, I try to focus on local imagery. So the photos that you see in the store are from Seattle. We try to highlight things we do, riders in our area.
Community. Yeah.
Totally. So yeah, we do rides and we've got these tables. We'll do like a big event and I'll have photos from that event, and we'll insert like a story from, you know, riders who are in Seattle who might be in the store, and they come in and they see photos of themselves, which is awesome.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, so I think it's like all these little steps, all the way down to like, you know, we carry Elm Coffee Roasters, and Elm is roasted right down the street in Pioneer Square. And so just tying that into our city and trying to support that.
Mm-hmm. How did you find community before Rafa? Or like, who did you ride with?
Yeah, so I mean, I am one of those people who ride with a couple of my close friends or by myself. And I think that riding often came, or community often came related to bikes, but off the bike for me. Because a lot of my riding, I was doing tours by myself or riding with three of my closest friends and just like, you know, tooling around town and like having fun. When I started becoming very like involved with the Rafa Cycling Club, it was a newer way of riding to me at that time, where I was riding with groups of people all the time, and you're like having all these conversations and meeting people, and I think that, yeah, it's, you know, one of Simon's big goals is like providing, like being a brand that gives people memories is what he always says. And I think, and it's funny because it's like sometimes like it'll sound sort of like cliche almost, and then you like, then you speak to people. And, you know, even here in Seattle, there's, like, this group of people who met through the RCC, and they are, like, the tightest homies. Like, they're, you know, families get together for dinners. They're going on trips together. And that's all outside of the club. They still ride with, and there's always new people being brought into that. Like, someone just moved here, and they go on a ride, and they meet, like, the whole crew. And then they get invited to go to have beers, and they bring their dogs. And so it actually comes out to be this very tangible thing that affects people's lives. And I've seen in the past 2 years where there's this group of people who didn't know each other existed before this club, and now it's like, you know, every day they talk to each other, they're a part of each other's lives, you know, their families get together, whatever. So it's very, very much like has impacted the course of pretty much every day of their lives.
How does a cafe kind of work its way into that?
So the cafe, yeah, I think, you know, it's all part of creating that space for someone to comfortably come and enjoy the sport of cycling. So obviously cycling and coffee are tied up pretty closely, you know, all the way back to, as we talked about, like the Italian espresso mid-ride. So, I mean, I think coffee and cycling are just culturally bound together pretty close. So I think it creates a reason to come here to meet for a ride. Everyone wants to start their ride from a coffee shop, and we want this place to be the hub of all things cycling. So I think when we started opening clubhouses, it might not be the most financially like viable thing to open cafes all over the place, but it serves to give that binding sort of reason to make this your go-to hub when you're riding a bike.
Yeah, I think it sets apart your atmosphere too. Like when you walk in off the street as well, I think that's just a nice cozy addition for those people. But then, like you're saying, for the actual community to before or after a ride, like sit down and chat, that's a really cool space to give people.
Yeah, and also if you're looking at, you know, our ultimate brand mission, right, which is like to make cycling the most popular sport in the world, you got to give a reason for us to talk to new people, and that means people who don't ride bikes at all. And so, you know, cafe also serves as this vehicle to bring people in who don't ride bikes, and they might come in for a coffee, and they might come in for a coffee a handful of times, and then you can start to bridge that conversation. And it happens all the time where someone's coming in because they saw an espresso machine and they wanted a coffee. So they roll in, they get a coffee, they have a conversation. They're like, I don't ride bikes, and kind of looking around, you know, likely intimidated. But, you know, hopefully whatever experience they have is positive and they come back at some point. And we've definitely seen where people have, you know, everyone's like, oh, I've got that bike in my garage that is like torn to pieces and I should probably get it out and start riding to work or whatever it is. And so we give them that connection, and we've definitely had those conversations where someone's like, you know, I'm going to take my bike to the shop. I'm going to try to start riding to work when the weather gets nice. And then you get them on a bike and all of a sudden it's like this, it can be this cascade to have a conversation with someone who didn't have that connection. And you just kind of provided a way to remind them like, that's something I should maybe think about doing.
So if I roll in with my beachcomber, are you guys gonna allow me in your club?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah.
Beach club.
I don't have a beachcomber.
How do you think it's helped as far as like events and putting on events? Has it given you guys more flexibility? Has it made things easier to host events? Do you use
having
it for
events?
Having a
cafe, yeah. Is what you mean. Yeah, totally. I mean, we were able to have beer, and I think it ties things together. It's not the center when we do an event often, you know, especially if we're doing something in the evening. It's not like we're slinging 100 coffees or something. But I think that, and you know, we would be able to do this. we would be able to do this without the cafe. We'd be able to do the same events, but I think that it definitely makes it a little simpler to have food, and it's a logical tie-in.
I'd love to talk a little bit more about kind of the community aspect of it. So you kind of talked about how to like bring newcomers in. I'd love to hear about your events. Maybe like, I think we looked up, there's one on Saturday that involved food, which Dana and I were like very interested in. But maybe just like talk to us about that event or other events and like how you kind of integrate that into kind of Seattle.
Yeah. So I think as a brand and Ref as a whole across all of our shops, we're always trying to like, one of the things that I look for when I think of putting on an event is like creating something that's like culturally relevant to the city, and can help give depth to cycling. So the event we did on Saturday is a good example of that, where it had this sort of culturally dense background where we were speaking about one of the most famous one-day bike races, which is Paris-Roubaix, and we wanted to tie that to a broader audience. So we brought in James Lechner from Bastille, who's a sommelier and owner of this great French restaurant.
Great choice, because everyone likes wine.
And everyone likes James because he's awesome. And so, you know, cycling, yeah, it does have this like big rich history in all kinds of stuff, coffee, alcohol, you know, way back drugs for sure, all these other things that are part of its story, for better or for worse in some cases. But so yeah, we worked with someone local who is a cyclist, huge fan of the sport, had him come in and pour ciders, beers, wines that were brewed in the towns that this famous one-day bike race passes through. And cool. Sort of, and the hope was to give people a different connection. So when I'm a newer cyclist relative, right? Relatively. So when I watch Paris-Roubaix, I know the people racing. I know some of the history of the bike race, less than some, a lot more than others, as far as my knowledge on that race. But the hope was to give like this whole different context where, you know, everyone has an appreciation for food and beverage to some degree, varying degrees for sure. But we can all taste something and have a sensory experience that hopefully connects us to the place where that event was taking place that we might never go. So yeah, that's a good example of an event where we're trying to give some depth to how someone experiences bike racing. And we brought it to a local sort of scale. It just gives you like a deeper connection to that race in particular. So I definitely think that next day the people that came out were like maybe thinking about the rad pear cider that we had that was brewed in this tiny town along the race course. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. We really appreciate talking with you. I feel like we've learned a lot about Rafa's culture and what you guys are doing differently. It's been a real pleasure.
Absolutely. Thanks for coming.
Listen up.
Here are some key takeaways for branded experiences. First up, partners.
What makes a good partnership, Dana?
It has to be mutually beneficial.
I agree. I feel like in the AT&T lounge, AT&T got a really great experience out of it.
Yep.
So all of their customers now have kind of a more relaxed space.
When they're getting their phone fixed. Yeah.
From Ada's point of view, it's just a little less successful.
Opportunity.
Yes.
Yeah.
They're not truly represented, I feel like, in that space.
Yeah, to their full capacity that they could have been.
Yeah, they're a bookstore first and like a cafe second, and that's not really represented there. So I would have loved to see that.
Yeah, for sure.
Pete's and Capital One felt successful, though.
Yep. For sure.
Pete's felt updated. It felt modern.
The first impression was good. You knew who it was a partner with.
And they are just a coffee shop. So it felt like it was fine that they were in that space.
Yeah, they brought something to the space that was crucial for them. Community. Very important.
Yeah, number two, community. If you're going to open a branded experience and a place where people are supposed to spend time, then you need to make sure that you have the community in that area in mind.
Yeah, something to offer because you're asking more of them than whatever you're usually asking for. Yeah, so if you're going to ask more, better be giving them something in return. And it'd be even better if you are listening to them and providing something that they want that fits in with your authentic culture as well.
And I personally didn't think that I was going to find that at Capital One Cafe.
Yeah, that was a delightful surprise.
But they provide financial advice and they do it for free for 3 sessions.
Yeah.
And I think that's such an amazing resource.
And for the nonprofits and school groups, I think that's like a major offering. Like there aren't a lot of spaces dedicated to that category.
For like meeting spaces.
Yeah.
Rafa, I think, is the best example of bringing community together in a space.
Yeah, absolutely. Just because of how frequent their events are and how thoughtful their events are.
Yeah, that Paris-Roubaix event seemed amazing. I don't bike, but I would go there.
Me too.
And kind of experience it.
And I loved that he said that they get ideas from the customers too for events. Like they're so stoked about the brand and like what they're doing that they have ideas for them.
Yeah, it's like a cycle of love.
a cycle of love.
Oh, whoa. Dear. Yikes. But they do it in a way that is totally honest and real. Like, the people that are coming to these events are coming because it's not like, oh, eye roll, like, these people want me to, like, do something that I don't want to do. It's like, no, they're offering something I'm, like, stoked to be part of. Yeah. Something I'm interested in.
They're not, like, hawking gear at their bike rides.
They're not selling you anything.
Yeah.
At all. The last category is being true to yourself.
Again, Rafa,
finally,
shining example of being true to yourself. I think their cafe provides a space that is, like, historically in line with what their company is about. Like,
their vision.
Yeah. Espresso and cycling go hand in hand. So, and also every, you know, he was talking about how every bike ride, people want to start it at a coffee shop.
Yeah.
So.
Just culturally in the sport.
Yeah. It totally makes sense. It totally makes sense that there's a cafe there.
Yeah.
And I think that touches on the idea of, like, not all of these branded experiences have to be cafes.
Right. It's asking the question, what do the people want?
Yeah. I feel like the cafe is, like, the lowest bar if you're a company. If you just want to bring people in and you just want to have, you know, coffee.
Something extra for them.
Yeah. I think what you have to make it true to your experience, right? So I think a really great example of that is Vans.
Totally.
So there are a couple House of Vans across, I don't know if it's globally, but
I think it's national. Yeah.
Yeah. But they have spaces where there are concerts, there's skate parks,
movie theaters,
there's a movie theater, and there's retail space within that. But all of that is just, like, culturally making. It's, like, culturally surrounding skateboarding.
Yeah, opportunities for their customers to engage with them completely outside of product.
Yeah. So the great thing about Vans is that they are engaging their customers in different ways aside from product. And that creates more brand loyalty. It creates engagement. It's a really great way to, you know, keep your customers.
Like, the best kind of brand loyalty, because they're not just coming back for sneakers every year. They're coming back multiple times a year for something more. And they'll remember the brand because of that.
And that's how you, as a brand, wiggle your way into your customers' lives.
There you go. We solved it all for you. You're welcome.
Hell yeah!
So, that was a lot of fun speaking with Brandon and getting to visit the Capital One Cafe and AT&T. I think it's nice to see that different companies are executing on this trend and seeing how each one is doing it differently.
Yeah, and it's just another example of how millennials are not killing physical retail.
Right. An online bank wants to open a physical cafe footprint, a giant one.
Yeah, we're just transforming the landscape so that, you know, we feel more connected.
And they realize that millennials do go in store and do care about, like, going to places that foster community.
Yeah, you just have to make it worth it for us.
Yep. So we're not killing anything, guys.
We're making things better.
Yeah, you're welcome.
You're welcome. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Tiffany.
And I'm Dana.
And tune in for our next episode where we talk about how millennials are killing offices.
Gonna be a real humdinger. So tune in.
A humdinger?
I don't know.
Okay.
Let's go. Bye.
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 This podcast was produced by Hornell Anderson. Artwork by Damien Bertels. Sound design and editing by Katie Schultz. Marketing support from Amber Johnson, Britt Stromberg, Stephanie Downs, Claudia Cicero, Jacob Toby, and Tim Garrison.